And to begin, I do have maybe one question for clarity. I think Mr. Jeffrey may, we were just discussing.
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
I think I have one question for clarity. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Mr. Jeffrey about this. The second assignment of error, the way it was reading, when you look at it, it looks like as far as the use of a firearm in connection with one robbery, was a little confusing because it almost seemed as if it was giving me the opportunity to argue that one of the robberies should be dismissed. I don't truly think that was the intent with what was granted. I think they were just
We granted the assignments of error that you put in your petitions for appeal. So I would suggest that you proceed and argue those assignments of error.
Yes. Well, first, dealing with the abductions, and counsel has conceded our first argument with regard to the assistant managers. There's two assistant managers that were involved. There's a Mr. Fitz, and just to make it simple, the other assistant manager I would name is Amanda, would be the second assistant manager. The Commonwealth has already conceded with regard to my argument regarding them, that would be founded, that there wouldn't be an abduction concerning Mr. Fitz or Amanda. So we have that from his brief. And it looks like what we're centering on with regard to the abductions turns towards a waitress that was involved, and there was a mention of a cook that was involved. And as far as addressing those two, the waitress I had conceded, this was a factual scenario where she was apprehended just outside of the office, the manager's office. She was clearly brought in by what we've labeled as suspect one. He had a firearm. He brought her to the threshold just inside the office. He had a weapon. We're conceding that that would be an abduction, so we're not contesting that. But what I would say at this point, my contest would really be any abduction conviction for the cook. And in addressing that, there are a couple things I wanted to point out. The first
didn't
is that
the cook have like a firearm up against her?
No, with regard to the cook apparently was addressed by suspect two, is what we're calling it. Okay. Suspect two clearly didn't have a weapon of any sort. Mm-hmm.
But it brought the cook in there with, I thought, something pressed up against the cook. Am I wrong on that?
Yes, that's not the cook. I think you're referring to the waitress.
I know the waitress had that, but anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But factually, with regard to the cook, what we have through the testimony of assistant manager Mr. Fitz, he was indicating that he saw the cook walk past the doorway, followed by suspect number two. What I would point out is in his observations, he didn't hear anything verbally said during the course of this robbery. So there's nothing said that could pertain to directing the cook or saying anything to the cook. And essentially from Mr. Fitz, and just to keep in mind, the whole entire incident took place in 12 seconds. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Fitz is also an individual who's looking at suspect one with a firearm. But in the course of that, what we have for evidence is we have the cook that's just being seen very quickly move past that doorway, followed by suspect number two, which we all know did not have a weapon.
Well, if you have a robbery going on and you grab someone and move them in a certain direction, even if you don't, that person doesn't have a weapon, why wouldn't that still be an aspiration of that person against their will that's not necessarily just part of the robbery, just because they don't have a weapon?
And it's not because they don't have a weapon, but based on the limited evidence that was presented at trial, mm-hmm. all we have is the cook moving past the doorway, followed by suspect number two. Mm-hmm. What's absent, though, is we don't have any indication of any sort of force or intimidation. We know suspect number two didn't have a weapon, that's clear, but there's no words being said directing the cook as the cook is walking past. And my issue there would be that we don't have any evidence showing force or intimidation to support an abduction of the cook. And I would also point out, I was trial counsel for this case in circuit court. And one of the things that was coming through our petition, the focus of the case with regard to the abductions was really centering on the two assistant managers and the waitress. And when you look at the transcript, after I had made my final closing argument at the close of the case, when the Commonwealth was responding, That's when they were bringing up for the first time that we were hearing that there could potentially be an abduction against the cook. It didn't give me an opportunity to then respond because I had already made my argument first.
And your argument was just on the two managers or assistant managers.
Yeah, the two managers and the waitress, which was really the focus of the case. So I wanted to point out the Commonwealth was raising that after I had made my final arguments. So I didn't have a chance to go back and address that. But also what's missing in this case, when you look at the indictments don't name individuals. So we don't have an individual linked with each charge. So there's no indictment here naming abduction. And I honestly don't know if we've even named the cook. I mean, we call the person the cook. I don't think we even have a name for the cook. But what's been charged originally were three abductions. And when you get to the closing argument, listening to the Commonwealth attorney at that time, he was indicating for the first time that we were hearing that there was a possible abduction of the cook. So I wanted to point those factors out. And also, when you look at the decision that the trial court made, the trial court just found my client guilty of all charges connected with this Hooters robbery. But there was no delineation by the trial judge as to which abductions of which people the court was actually finding my client guilty of. And so I think if we're considering my client being found guilty of abduction of the cook, that there's some serious errors there, which I would argue would prevent the court from finding my client guilty of abduction against the cook. And that would be my argument as far as the abduction side. And quickly, with regard to potentially arguing about a robbery, the robbery that we were really putting at issue was centering around the robbery as it pertains to the waitress. And as Your Honors, I think, have seen, the waitress was grabbed outside the hall. She was brought in to the doorway by suspect number one, who had a firearm. But with regard to the robberies, the two people that were there were the two assistant managers who were located in the office. They were both there. We know from the testimony that Mr. Fitz, when he's seeing suspect one with the firearm, he gets out of his seat, he backs up to the back of the office and puts his hands up. And he's described that the other assistant manager, who we're calling Amanda, when she sees the suspect with the firearm, her reaction was then without, and again, nothing is being said. It was clear that there were no words being said. Her actions were to go directly to the safe, to where the black box is. The black box contains the money, and basically point that out, which then suspect number one recovers and leaves. And my issue with regard to robbery pertaining to the waitress is one, I was making an argument, a fiduciary argument, with regard to the assistant managers. Part of their job, they're located in the office, they're doing work, they're the overseers of, you know, basically that store, the Hooters store at that location. Now, I could understand, and I'm not conceding that there's actually two robberies with regard to the assistant managers, but getting past that, I can see how that's their location, that's part of their responsibility. But my issue with regard to the waitress, it appears that she was just walking back there concerning a coupon for a customer and just happened to arrive when the suspects are coming in. But based on that evidence, I don't see that there's actually a robbery of the waitress. I think she was kind of caught in the process of a robbery trying to take place. But I don't see where I bring one issue up, really where she has any sort of exercise of possession. In this case, would have to be constructive possession, but I don't see where she's even in a position to exercise any sort of possession to be considered a robbery of the waitress. My initial argument was that there's just one quantity of money that was taken. There happened to be two assistant managers there. I was originally arguing that there should just be one robbery conviction instead of possibly two. But with regard to this third one for the waitress, that would be my argument. Even though she was brought from the hall to the doorway, I still don't think that puts her in a position where she could exercise control sufficient so that would create a conviction for robbery with regard to her. And I would mention that as far as my arguments. And I believe at this point those would be my arguments.
Okay. Well, you have a little more time than you asked for then for rebuttal. If you would like to reserve that.
Yes, I'll reserve that for rebuttal.
Okay. Right. Thank you, Mr. Yancey.
Thank you.
Mr. Jeffrey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the court, Donald Jeffrey from the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Commonwealth. As Mr. Yancey has stated, we have conceded that one abduction and the related firearms charge should be reversed. If the court has questions about those, I'll certainly be happy to try to answer those. I would note, if you do accept that concession...
Reversed and dismissed.
Correct, yes. Your Honor. The evidence was legally insufficient, and we base that largely on this court's opinions in Wiggins and Hoyt, which apply the Supreme Court of Virginia opinion in Brown. I've laid that out on brief. You know, I guess really the only issue, if you accept that concession, is how do you do it? What do you do procedurally at this point? You know, I'd suggest to you, since all three abduction convictions got the exact same sentence, 20 years, all of which was suspended, and the defendant in this case also got one three-year first offense firearm and then several 5 years, so he would certainly be entitled to have one first offense conviction. So one of the five-year sentences would be the one that would have to be reversed. Procedurally, because of the way these are queued up, I suspect in the first instance this court could reverse and dismiss. I know that there have been other cases. Sable is notable. It's a published opinion. It's a case I handled several years ago, 37 Virginia Appellate, S-A-B-O-L. Not quite the same scenario, but in that case the court remanded for the trial court to sort of sort out which one in that case was reversed. There were two rape convictions, and the record was somewhat of a morass in terms of which one was the bad one. So anyway, I put that out to you procedurally in terms of the ones that should be reversed. And again, I'm happy to answer any questions as far as that concession if the court would like to hear from me. With respect to the sufficiency on the abductions, again, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, if you look at pages starting at about 69 to 70, Mr. Fitz starts testifying about how this cook is grabbed and moved into the office area. There is an objection to that, and then Mr. Fitz is asked to clarify, how do you know the cook was moved? Because for one, the cook came there with the robber behind him, and he said he saw that himself. And he was walking that way with the second robber behind him. And when that individual testified, because who was referred to as the second robber did testify at trial, on page 115. Now, he denied taking anyone, but of course you can accept in part, reject in part under the purposes of appeal. He admits that Mr. Sears, that was the inside man, to use maybe the lay definition. Sears was a Hooters employee who was a co-defendant in this case, essentially had told the two people who went inside to round up everybody, and then he said he went down looking for people who were 15 feet away in the dish room, telling them to come here. Now, he claims he didn't grab anybody, but obviously there's other evidence in the record to rebut that contention. So essentially what I would suggest to you is that you've got a situation here where this gentleman was dragged from a distance some point away. As you know, it was a fairly fast-evolving situation. We know it was 12 seconds based on the videotape. And I think, again, viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, you've got this cook moved in there, used as leverage to facilitate the people in the office cooperating, and they, in fact, did comply. I don't think that we need to show that a gun was used by the second robber. I don't believe, Judge Beals, to answer the question you asked opposing counsel, I don't think there's any evidence in the record to suggest that that second robber was armed. I think he, in fact, testified that he was not, and I don't think there's any contrary evidence in the Commonwealth's case. I certainly, if the court thinks that's an important point, I'll check behind you on
that. But basically, the evidence is that he grabbed the cook and moved the cook by the office, so they saw the cook grabbed, but then didn't even bring her in the office, or him, I guess it was a man.
The cook, I believe, was actually visible. In fact, I know based on Mr. Fitz's testimony that the cook was in fact visible, but I believe Mr. Fitz actually testified they did not bring him physically inside the office.
Enough so that they saw that they had the cook.
Correct, Your Honor. You know, for what this is worth, with respect to the first robber, there was a piece of testimony at page 79, lines 12 to 15, where Mr. Fitz was asked a question about whether the gun was pointed at, this would be the waitress, and his response was, it was pointed at all of us in some aspect. So I think that kind of plays into this idea that this person, that the second person, the cook, was in fact under a situation of coercion and intimidation at the time, again, viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. If the court doesn't have any questions on the abductions, I'll transition to the robberies very, very quickly. One other thing about the abductions, too, for what this is worth. Opposing counsel does correctly state that we did not have enumerated victims in these indictments. The Commonwealth did make the arguments starting at page 274 of the joint appendix as to who the potential victims could be. There was no objection based on notice or defects in the indictments, and I would suggest to you that to the extent that that's being injected in that case, that's not before you. The arguments were made. My brief was a little bit misleading on this point, inadvertently so, because really this argument was made, and then at page 279, the judge essentially just says, I find the evidence sufficient on all the charges related to the Hooters robbery, and that was it. But obviously the point I was making was that he had adopted the Commonwealth's argument with respect to the potential victims, including the cook, and that was a little unclear. That plays out from about 274 to 279 of the appendix. With respect to the robberies, opposing counsel is correct, and the court actually made a point of this in the footnote. There was no petition granted. In the petition for appeal, the court found the evidence sufficient to prove three robberies. In the denial order, the court found sufficient evidence to prove that three robberies had occurred. The only argument on brief as to why any of the firearms charges related to the robberies should be reversed is because there was insufficient evidence on the robberies. So I think axiomatically, because the court has not granted that appeal, that issue is I wouldn't say it's not before you, but really is a dead letter at this point. I would also note, as I noted on brief, that the argument made at trial was a little different. Essentially, at trial, it was one cache of money. There could only be one robbery. Now it has shifted, and this was also consistent with the one-judge denial order. Now it's shifted to she didn't really have custody and control. There were really only two robberies, the two assistant managers. So it is a slightly different argument, as a judge of this court has already found. And last, on the merits, based on cases such as Barnes and some of the others that I cited on brief, including, I think, one unpublished opinion, Judge Beals, you may have sat on, this was used to facilitate. She was used as leverage. And Barnes probably, I believe, is the best case on that point. It's cited on brief, and I'd certainly... I'm sorry, I said Barnes, but I may have quoted the wrong case. Johnson, I'm sorry. I had cited Barnes for another proposition. Johnson is the one, essentially, and that's the one that talks about Ms. Cherry, who was a sales lady employed by a gas company that was essentially pushed back to the office area, and the argument essentially was that she didn't have custody or control of the money. The two people in the office did. I'm not sure what happened with the other two people who were in the office, because the only thing on appeal in the Supreme Court was that sales lady who was pushed back and essentially held in a manner similar to what happened here with the waitress. So I think based on that precedent, and I cited you some other Court of Appeals cases on that, Sullivan and Critchlow, the evidence was also sufficient with respect to that victim. Unless the court has further questions, I'll rely on my brief.
Any further questions, Mr. Jeffrey?
Thank you. I'd ask you to affirm, other than the ones that we've already conceded on.
On the one abduction and the one felony committed in commission of an abduction.
Correct, Your Honor. And one other point. I believe for what this is worth to the court, if it matters, on appendix page 9, I think, is actually the one that the judge made the first offense firearm, the three-year one, if that's of any use to you. Based on my reading of the final order and cross-referencing the way that they use the case numbers there, that would appear to be the one that he put the three-year sentence on. So, again, I think one of the five-year ones is the faulty one here. He gets the benefit of that first offense, I would believe. Thank you.
Joint Appendix 9.
Joint Appendix 9, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Yancey, you have your rebuttal time.
Thank you. I don't think this will take very long. I just wanted to respond to a couple of points that Mr. Jeffrey raised In going back to the abduction of the cook, he did point out, looking at page 115, and I would just ask you, in reading that, Mr. Nugent is starting by saying what Sears told us to expect. And to remind you, Sears is the person who works at Hooters. He's the inside man that knows everything about the procedures, the layout, and all of that. His response was starting about what Sears had told him to expect. But as he continued in answering that, he was clearly indicating that Sears said to round everybody up. And then he was asked, did you round everybody up? And his response was clearly no, he didn't round anybody up. So even from Mr. Nugent, he doesn't give any evidence to show that from his testimony that anybody was even rounded up. But I was pointing back, when you look at Mr. Fitz's testimony, again, he says he's seeing the cook walk past the door, followed by suspect number two. He doesn't hear anything being said verbally, and clearly it was shown suspect number two did not have a weapon. And that's why my issue with regard to an abduction there is there's no indication that there was any type of force or intimidation. You can't get that looking at the testimony from Mr. Nugent, and that's specifically addressed on page 115. You can't get that looking at the testimony from Mr. Fitz. And again, it's a 12-second robbery. It's very quick. And he's just describing this one cook going past the door followed by suspect two. But I would submit, based on that, that wouldn't be sufficient for a finding of abduction. And I'd also include each abduction carries a firearm, a use of a firearm charge, that if the abduction is struck and dismissed, that likewise the use of a firearm connected with that should be dismissed as well. And with regard to, and again, with regard to the going back to the robbery, and I've heard Mr. Jeffrey mention the waitress may have been used as leverage, and I just state when you're reading the transcript, there's actually nothing said by Mr. Fitz, who's that assistant manager who's testifying. There's nothing said by him indicating that seeing the waitress being held at gunpoint was having any sort of effect on him, causing him to do anything. He was just describing what his actions were, but he didn't mention anything about the waitress influencing him in any way. It appears from his testimony he's just seeing the firearm with suspect one, and then he said he immediately stands up and just moves to the back of the office, which is, he said, a fairly large office. But I would take issue with the waitress being used as leverage. We really don't have that in a transcript. And again, as far as the robbery of the waitress, just to address that point, if that's being considered, again, she's brought from the hall just to the outside threshold of where the door is to the office. I think there's a little difference. I think the case that Mr. Jeffrey's referring to, that employee was actually brought right there in the middle of everything with regard to where the money actually was and very close to it. And I would argue that she could be in a position with regard to that case of exercising some type of possession by control. This case is different. She was only brought to the threshold of that door. She wasn't brought all the way in and anywhere near where the safe was, where the money was. And again, this happening just in 12 seconds, to keep in mind, the other assistant manager, when she sees suspect one with the weapon, immediately goes to the safe, unlocks the safe, points out there's the box, suspect one grabs it and leaves, all happening in a very short period of time. But my argument, again, I still don't see that the waitress would be in any position to exercise any type of possession. In this case, it would have to be some sort of constructive possession to meet the element that's required for robbery there. I think it'd be different with regard to the assistant managers, just for argument's sake, but I'm not giving up my original position that I think there should be one robbery. But I don't think that there's enough evidence for a third robbery with regard to the waitress. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Yancey. We will recounsel, and then this court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
All rise.